The following program is sponsored by Friends of Life Outreach International.
Coming up, Beth Moore helps us discover our true selves.
Hurts happen. Injuries happen. All of us have scars. All of us have wounds. All of us do. Life's tough. It's tough. So we've all got a limp of some kind wrestling through life on planet Earth, but we do our best to hide it. Why?
Are you hiding who you really are? Next on Life Today.
And I know some of you are glad we can't see you, but we welcome you live today. I'm James Robinson. Betty and I are thrilled to present Wednesdays with Beth. We actually refer to our Wednesdays as Wednesdays in the Word because that's what's going to happen. I want to show you something very cute.
I love that.
This is the beautiful little Christmas ornament. You say, what in the world are you doing talking about at this time of the year? Well, we want to give it to you. It's a little shoe. It's quite beautiful. And on the back of it, it's stamped, Life's Christmas Shoe Project. And we give smiles and shoes for Christmas. And you're going to want to get one of these. We're giving it to those of you who'll simply help us give children some shoes. And you're going to want to do that. Well, Beth is teaching on our true selves. And I think sometimes people don't know. They really don't know what they look like. And I think even, sometimes we have too high an opinion, but more than often, we may have a low opinion. Then we don't want to get honest about ourselves. Well, let's listen to Beth because I think she's going to inspire all of us. Here's Beth. Welcome.
Listen, have you ever had a revelation happen to you when you realize that what it is you find distasteful about somebody is what is in them that is in you?
Yeah. Yes.
I hate it. I absolutely hate it. That what you resist is that it forces you to look in the mirror, that what you see in them is a seed of yourself. That's what you can't stand. And it's this glance at it. I got to tell you where this has happened to me. And because we're just being honest, this is our series. We're just like being transparent before one another. And unfortunately, I'm the only one doing all the talking. It's time for you to write me and tell me all your honesty. But okay, every now and then, God will cause me to kind of have almost an obsessive stare at a woman who, in her attempt to retain youth when youth was no longer possible, she has completely disfigured her face. I'm talking about disfiguring her face. I'm talking about when you look at somebody and think, what has happened that you can look in the mirror and you think that looks okay? I've got a very, very good dear friend who is a dermatologist. And she said, you cannot know how many times we try to say to a patient, it's not going to look good. I'm going to ask you. She said, every now and then she just goes, I can't do it. You can have somebody else do it, but I can't do it. Because when you do that, you honestly are not going to any longer look real. I don't mean trying to work with what you've got. I'm not talking about a little nipping and tucking here. I'm talking about a whole restructuring where somebody looks like they've got on this weird mask and they've got all these implants in their face. They no longer have any nose at all. And now when your cheeks stick out further than your nose in your profile, something ain't right. Is somebody with me on this? But see, the Lord, I'll get almost obsessed with it. Like, I can't quit looking at it. Like, if it's in an airport or something, or in a restaurant or something, sometimes Keith will go, do I need to sit to the side where you can see better? Because what I know is bothering me is that I think the Holy Spirit is saying to me, you want to be careful, Beth, don't you? You know, because I want to, you know, work out. I like fun clothes. You know, I want to have cool hip hair. Where's the line? I don't know. I don't know where it is. Because if somebody argued it with me, I mean, I would say, do you color your hair? We wear makeup. Most of you guys don't. Some of you do. I mean, like, where is the line? Because truly, the only way you can know it in the culture that we live in is to walk in the Spirit enough to where God can say through His Holy Spirit within you, mm-mm. And so the Lord will constantly, when I'm in a situation, I'm looking at someone that's just a few years older than me, that has kind of gone bizarre on it. I'll hear Him say in my inner man, that what you want? You better be careful, Beth. Stay this side of the line. Lord, well, I know where the line is. And so I've got to deal with my daughters. My daughters are both in their early 30s. One is 30 and one is 32, and I've got to deal with them. So this is what I want you to do. If mommy ever crosses the line and I no longer look like a normal person, if you ever come home and I've got a small nose, and I'm not dogging having a nose job. Listen, goodness knows I'd have loved to have had one at some point, but by the time I had the money to, I didn't care anymore. Does anybody know what that's like? I'm not dogging any of that, but I'm saying just bizarre. When somebody, is anybody, I need to see your hand if you know what I'm talking about. It's just like bizarre, like, whoa. I mean, let me tell you something. By the time, there's this whole big thing that came out a couple of years ago, 60 is sexy. I want to tell you something. No, it's not. Pick your shirt up, because it's really not. You know, it's a lot of things. It's a lot of good things, but no, sexy's not one of them. I can't really even tell you 50's sexy. I just can't. Because, you know, it's not what it's about then. But we're trying to be that. It's a little gross. And so I asked am I telling you all the truth or am I making something up? Is this just me being sensitive or have you seen it? And so I've made a deal with my daughters, Amanda and Melissa. I said, here's what I want you to do. If you ever like look at me and go, whoa, where's our mother? I want you to say, Mother, we love you so much, but you look like an idiot. That's all I'm asking. That's all I'm asking. I need somebody. Because see, what we don't like is just like we have to face something that is like a Goliath size of something that is pent up inside of us. And it's scary. Now, I want to read the first three verses of Genesis 33. And I'm relieved and you're relieved because, listen, that was a painful few minutes we just spent, wasn't it? Was it painful to anybody besides me? I'd love to hear what you men are relating on, because there's got to be a way that that relates to you guys as well. Genesis 33, 1 through 3. So here he goes walking off. We've got the sun coming up. The music's really playing loud. It's so powerful. The sun is rising. You can see the sun coming up just like purple through the clouds and through that gorgeous, gorgeous ray of sun coming up. And we see Jacob, and he's limping. And a lot of scholars will say there's no reason for us to ever think that he ever got over it. I mean, who was going to like pull out his leg? You know what I'm saying? In those days, a lot of times when there was an injury, it just stayed and it just dogged him until their death. And so in all likelihood, he always kind of had a little bit of an unstable walk. And it says, and Jacob lifted up his eyes and look, and behold, Esau was coming. And I love this part because it goes ahead and tells us that the 400 men, sure enough, 400 men were with him. And so here's what Jacob did. Now we remember, those of us who were in the first half of the series together, we know that he did a lot of conniving and planning. And we're going to see how much he really brings to pass at this point. Because here's what happens. It says that he divides the children among the mothers. Here's Leah and Rachel and their children. Here's the servants with them. And he put the servants with their children in front, then Leah and her children, and Rachel and Joseph last of all. But notice something very important here. Verse 3, he himself went on, what is the next word? Ahead of them. He went before them. Do you remember over and over? Check it out. All over Genesis chapter 32. He was saying, and Jacob, he's coming behind us. Always hiding behind the cushion us from the person we're not wanting to face. Have you ever needed to really face someone? And not just because it's a biblical command to take another witness, but because you just wanted protection. Take a whole group with you so that that person will be nice to you. Anybody? Only this time, something's happened. Because this time, Jacob is right out front. Right out front. Because you see, once we've wrestled with God and lived through it, we can face almost anything. Almost anything. He's ready to go face him. And what I just love is he faces him. I mean, he walks on ahead of them with his limp. With his limp. And you know what occurred to me? You know what? We have all got a limp. We all do. I need you to know I have got a limp. You don't live 55 years on planet Earth unscathed. Hurts happen. Injuries happen. All of us have scars. All of us have wounds. All of us do. Life's tough. It's tough. So we've all got a limp of some kind wrestling through life on planet Earth. But we do our best to hide it. Why? Because I'm going to tell you something. Actually, we're going to see Esau run to him. And I wonder if we could make the point that when we are not so careful to hide our limp and when we want everybody to think we've got it together, we are no longer even approachable. But when they can see, I've been injured. I've been hurt. I've been rejected. I've been betrayed. I have been more secure or more insecure than anybody you know. Then that frees them up to approach without their own hiding. I love it. He went ahead of them. And it says something really strange. In verse 3, it says, "And he went on before them, bowing himself to the ground 7 times until he came near to his brother." So here he comes. Now, picture this, because you need to know that, I mean, there's like getting up and getting down 7 times, but there's nothing like doing that all with a fresh limp. His hip joint is pulled out. So I want you to picture the discomfort that while he's walking toward his brother Esau, he is getting down on the ground and he is bowing 7 times. Now, that's so bizarre to us. I mean, if we did that today, people would just be going like, "Get up. I mean, what are you doing?" But in their world, it was what someone would do if they were submitting to someone else. It's how they would show, "Listen, I come to you as one who is greater than myself. I come to you. I present myself before you with humility. I will present myself before you as inferior to how I see you." So it'd be like somebody would do this before their king. This is something that their world understood, but here it's even more fascinating because it is the echo of Isaac's blessing way back in Genesis 27 that he thought he was giving to his firstborn son. But he gives it to Jacob instead because Jacob has tricked him and he has dressed up as his brother Esau. But listen to this. He says, "May nations bow down before you and your mother's sons bow down before you." So in this demonstration, you're going to see over and over how Jacob is attempting to give back the blessing to his brother Esau. Because once the Lord got hold of him and blessed him, he did not need anything else anybody could give him. Do not miss that. I'd say so. And he said, "You have it. Have it back." So when it had been spoken, "Your brother will bow down before you." He knew that Jacob thought he was saying that over Esau. So Jacob says, "I'll bow down. I'll bow down before my brother." And he bowed down before him 7 solid times. And it says then, but Esau, I just love this. Verse 4, "But Esau ran to meet him. And he embraced him and fell on his neck. And he kissed him and they wept." What in the world? What in the world? What grace. What beauty. We don't know. Was this always on Esau's mind? Did he change his mind when he saw Jacob? We have no way of knowing. I'm constantly in a situation, in a narrative, when I want to say, "Lord, give me a little more than that." If a woman had written it, we'd know what they smell like. We'd know everything about it. We'd know every single detail. What'd they say to the person standing beside them? What did they look like? What was the expression like? But men were inspired to write this, so we're left just going like, "What happened there?" And I want to know, did he plan it? Why were the 400 men with him? What changed when he saw him? What, I mean, why did he need the 400 men if he was just going to run and hug him? I think maybe when he saw him. Have you ever made a monster out of somebody until you saw him again? Yeah. You know, you're not near the monster I made you out to be. He just ran to him after his brother's bowing down like this, runs to him. And he just grabs him and embraces him. He falls on his neck and he just kisses him. And it says that they just begin to weep. And I don't know, I can't even think when that would have been that I would have ever seen face to face two men literally just weep in one another's arms. But it would be a powerful scene. Much more so. I mean, women can do that when they just go like, oh, you look precious. You look darling. I mean, we could do that. But like two men just crying their eyes out. It's so, so powerful what happens in this scene. It says in verse 5, and when Esau lifted up his eyes and saw the women and the children, he said, who are these with you? And Jacob said, the children whom God has graciously given to your servant. Do you hear the subservient talk? Then the servants drew near, and they and their children, and bowed down, and Leah likewise and her children bowed down. And the last, Joseph and Rachel drew near, they bowed down. Esau saw the rest of it. He sees all his gifts now, all these servants, all these animals. He says, what do you mean by all this company that I've met? So a sweet thing. You know, I have a very close connection with women who have taken part in the Bible studies. They will say to me, you probably find this weird, but I feel like you're my friend. What they don't know that's even weirder is I feel it too. Sometimes I will feel it in advance. I'll sense that someone has Christ on them. They may not have no familiarity with the studies whatsoever, but I'll just sense the Spirit of Christ on somebody before it has ever even come up. And it's just, it's a powerful, powerful, powerful thing. And we see this so beautifully as they come together in a way that is completely unexpected. And when I meet someone and I'll say to them, as I begin to hug them, I'll look around and I'll see their family. Now, who are these? And get down and talk to those children. Reach out and shake her husband's hand. I hug the women and I shake the men's hands. That's what was happening here. He just was looking around going, who are all of these? Who are all of these? Jacob says, they're those that God has graciously given to your servant. And he says, I love this because he says, Esau says, what do you mean by all of this? And so Jacob answers him in verse 8 and says, but I want to give them to you so that I might find favor in your sight. And Esau says something powerful in verse 9. But Esau said, I have enough, brother. Keep what you have for yourself. What an unusual thing to be said in our day of excess. When was the last time we just went, I have enough? I just have enough.
To obtain information on Beth's teaching materials and for her speaking schedule, visit us online at lifetoday.org.
I don't think we hear that very often. I think it's a give me mentality. Dear God, I pray you would really deliver us from that sense of never having enough, especially as it relates to stuff, accumulation. Lord, I pray that we'll want you to have more of us and for you to be filling us to overflowing. We thank you for Beth. In Jesus' name, we give you praise. I want to show you something that I think is going to inspire you. You know, when I opened the program, I held up a little Christmas shoe. Well, here's what we want to do with your help. And boy, when I say we want to do it with your help, there's not a single thing that we ever do on Life Today and Life Outreach that is not something we want to do, and that we includes you. When we find a need that we believe should be met in love, we seek to meet it. But the fact is, we can't do any worthwhile thing unless you agree. And when we saw all these little dirty feet with cuts and infections all over the world, we thought, you know, many of these children never had shoes. And let's do that. And I tell you, you hold up a little shoe like that and it just touches everybody's heart. But this little kid's real important too. I want you to listen to one of our dear friends on the mission field and listen to what Tammy says about what we can do. And this is something, I know it's way ahead of time, but we got to do it ahead of time because we can do something very special for Christmas. And I think there's not a single one of you watching that won't realize I can do something. Just listen.
Something that we take so for granted is wearing a pair of shoes every day. I don't think any one of us watching this right now is without a pair of shoes, but the reality is that there are hundreds of children around me at this moment that have no shoes. And I love Life Outreach for so many reasons, not just Water for Life or Rescue for Life or the food programs, but even bringing shoes to little ones. Listen, without it, they are in danger every single day. The simple things that we think about, like even just cutting your feet, walking in water that is diseased and full of bacteria, getting into a cut, I mean, they could literally lose their life. What a privilege we have to bring them a pair of shoes. Every one of these little ones is going to get a pair of shoes today. What I love is that this simple pair of shoes has become a treasure to this little girl. I love that she's holding on to it like it's the greatest gift she's ever been given. And it costs very little. For a little amount of money, we can produce thousands of shoes that could change a life, one child at a time, starting with her.
You know, Betty, you and I walked in areas that weren't even fit for you to be in with shoes on and saw these beautiful little feet. And you remember we were in Central America and I prayed, I saw a little girl. I guess maybe her big brown eyes reminded me of our little girls when they were her age, big brown eyes. And I prayed she'd come, she had left. I prayed that little girl come back. And I wanted to sit down and talk to her. And she came back and amazingly sat in my lap. And I just loved her. But we saw children that were in the hospital dying from diseases. They got infections from their feet. And you're holding this beautiful little Christmas
I can assure
ornament.
You there will be one on our tree this year. I love it. You know, I think about the precious feet of children. You know, when our children were small babies, I just loved to kiss the bottom of their little feet, you know. And I look at these children, and you probably wouldn't want to kiss the bottom of their feet because so many of them do get diseased from all the cuts and all the things that they have to walk through every day of their life. And I think it's so wonderful that we had the opportunity to put shoes on their feet. I look at the small size. We all like the small size. Aren't they cute? They're so cute. But I think if we can start with them this young, then they'll get to be this size without all the disease and the infection. So I hope you will join us. Put a smile on their faces. I love to see the shine on their faces, James, when they smile. It's a gift to them. They don't really realize probably at what depth it's gonna help them, but they are happy to have the shoes.
Well, when you give shoes to these little children, and these will last a long time. They've got an adjustable strap so they can actually grow into them and get them a little bit larger than they need initially. And they'll last quite a while. When they see that love coming, and we're able to tell them it came because God put love in our heart, it opens the way for the missionaries. It's indescribable. Here's what I'd like to ask you to do. If you give $36, we got 10 pairs of shoes. You give $144, and we got 40 pairs of shoes. We're asking others to consider giving $1,000, and we're going to give smiles for Christmas and shoes. We're going to do cleft palate surgery and other facial surgeries that are desperately needed. So if you can help us, just dial the number, take your bank card, and make the gift God put in your heart. Surely you can give some shoes. It may be that you can give more than we even suggested, but it seems most of you watching could give 10 pairs of shoes, couldn't you? Even children do that. But would you please help us? You can go online, lifetoday.org, and make your gift. We're going to send the beautiful Christmas ornament. We'll send the bronze Christian, a missionary rescuing a boy that lived in literally underground in the sewers. And that's an outreach that we've done for children to give them a home, too. But right now, we want you to help us give shoes. I pray you'll go to the phone or go online. Make the gift God puts on your heart.
Poverty is a killer, and because of it, children needlessly suffer, not only from a lack of food and clean water, but also from a lack of things we take for granted, such as a healthy smile or a simple pair of shoes. For most of these children, they've never owned a new pair of shoes. And while that may seem minor in the light of all their needs, walking with bare feet puts them at risk of life-threatening infections that could lead to crippling consequences, disease, and even death. By responding today, you can help Life immediately secure and begin shipping Christmas shoes to 200,000 children around the world, just in time for the holidays. Your gift of $36 will help provide 10 pairs of shoes. A gift of $72 will help provide 20 pairs. And a gift of $144 will help provide 40 pairs of Christmas shoes for children in need. In appreciation of your gift, be sure to request our 2013 Christmas shoe ornament. This beautifully crafted, antiqued ornament is a unique reminder of your gift for Christmas shoes, a treasure to place on your tree each holiday season. Finally, please consider a gift of $1,000 or more to help provide over 275 pairs of shoes or two children with corrective cleft palate surgeries. And you may request the limited edition 50th anniversary bronze sculpture, Christian, by renowned artist Robert Summers. Please call, write, or make your gift online today.
I am anxious to send you one of these beautiful, beautiful little Christmas ornaments because it's basically a testimony. You're going to have people ask you about it, maybe as much as anything you have on the tree, and then remember the beautiful bronze. Christian, this little fellow lived in the sewers of Romania, literally in the underground drainage. And our daughter Rhonda, our oldest daughter, held him just like this. This particular girl is a missionary. We're sending that to those of you who will make a $1,000 gift. Remember to give smiles, surgeries for cleft palates, shoes and smiles for Christmas. Great gift, all in love. Thank you for watching. Thank all of you for being here with us.
Tomorrow, James asks if you have ever truly repented.
I turned my eyes upon Jesus. He changed my life.
Life Today is made possible by the supporters of Life Outreach International. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of Life. The ministry features specific outreaches as examples of the programs it supports and conducts. Gifts are considered to be without restriction as to use unless explicitly stipulated by the donor. The ministry is a member of the ECFA.